Today, here in the Daf Yomi is the Gemara in Ksubos Daf Yud Zayin. We're learning today Le'ili Nishmas Sylvia Nywood, Zissel Bas Rav Tzvi Hirsch Michel, and also Dina Wallenstein, Dina Bat Shlomo. All the Neshamas we learned for should have an Aliyah from our learning. And we begin this very exciting Daf today on the very last two lines of Tez Zayin Omid Beis with the famous words of Ketzad Miraktim Lifnei Hakala. Tana Rabban, two lines in the bottom. Brisa tells us as follows. How are we supposed to celebrate the Kala? Ketzad miraktim lifnei Kala. What is the proper halachic way that we should go and rejoice in front of the Kala and dance in front of the Kala? So Beishamai Yomrim, and we turn to Yitzayin Amud Aleph, Beishamai has the famous shita that says as follows. Kala kimos shehi. Rashi tells us you have to praise the Kala according to her actual praise. Lefi yofya, according to her beauty, v'chashivusa, and according to her importance, makalsimo, so you praise her. In other words, Beishamai says, you're brutally honest. If the Kala is an exceptionally beautiful and special girl, you say so. If not, you also say so. You don't praise her excessively if she's not deserving of it. No, Kala Noa V'Chasuda. We, of course, sing the song, Kala Noa V'Chasuda. We paskin like Beis Hillel, and we say that every Kala is both beautiful and has chayin to them. Chasuda means basically chayin. Rashi says, Chut Shel Chesed Moshuch Olea. She has a thread of chesed, of chayin, that runs through her. In other words, all Kalas are beautiful. Beishamai says to Beis Hillel, Omulen, Beishamai to Beis Hillel, what about the Kala? Nebuch has some serious physical abnormalities to her. For example, she's chigeris, she's unable to walk properly, she's lame. Osuma, she's blind. Do you still say, Omrim lo Kala no v'chasuda? That's lying. How can you say that this is a beautiful Kala, a chosh of a Kala? The Torah tells us, the Parshas Mishpatim, midvar sheker tirchok. Person has to stay far away from saying falsehoods. Person should not say something that's not true. How can you say honestly that this is a Kala nor of a Chasuda? Beishamai, very logical and exact approach. Beis Hillel responds, no. Amulem Beis Hillel Beishamai. And Beis Hillel's opinion, of course, is the opinion that has won out. Le divreichem, according to you, what would you do in the following scenario? Mishalokach mekach ra min hashuk. If somebody goes and purchases something that's not so objectively good, guy buys a new garment, and it's a suit, you can't return it, and it's a horrible color, and it looks terrible. But the guy bought it. There's not much he can do about it. So what do you do? Yishabchenu be'enov, oyganenu be'enov. Beis Hillel asks Beishamai, what do you do for this poor guy? He just bought this suit. It looks terrible on him. Do you say, oh, I can't believe you wasted your money on that suit. It's terrible. Or you just say, it's a nice suit. So, Hevi Omer, Yishabchenu be'enov. You're supposed to be nice to people and not cause them distress. So this guy is made a purchase. Okay, we're not in love with what he wore. We're not in love with this purchase, but you tell him it's a nice purchase, so he shouldn't feel bad. And therefore, you tell a person nice things in order that there should be the idea, Mikan Omru Chachom, Chachom tell us, this opinion Beis Hillel has won out. La'olam te daito shalodam o'revis im habrios. We should always be nice. What a message for the 3 weeks. And Rashi points out, lasos le'ish v'ish kirt so no. We should try to be nice to people and make them feel good. We're not looking, Rachmon al-Litzlan, to go and make people feel bad. Now the preacher says, you don't say an outright lie. You don't say, that's the most beautiful sweater I ever saw. However, again, if it's something that can't be returned, then it's not something that's going to damage the person. Listen, he's going on a business interview, and if he wears that garment, it's inappropriate, he's going to lose the job. So then you have an obligation to Hashavas Aveda, make sure the guy doesn't lose something. But once he's purchased something and he can't return it, and it's not something that is something that's going to hurt him or damage him, and he asks you, what do you think of this? So you say, it's nice, lav dafka, that you have to agree that it's the nicest thing in the world. This isn't called midvar sheker tirchok. This is called basically saying a white lie in order to preserve shalom and to make people happy. And we see this from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that under certain situations we've discussed in the past, we won't go through details right now, that for shalom bias, a person can even erase the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what we do with the sota, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Avraham Avinu that Sarah said she was old and not that she said that you were old, because that would have stared in some way the shalom bayis between Avraham and Sarah. So under certain very exact circumstances, and again, one needs to sometimes ask a shiloh when this is allowed or not, you are allowed to say a white lie, not tell the absolute truth in order to preserve shalom. And that's in fact what happens over here. The Kala Nova Chasuda is certainly something. This person is marrying this woman. He can't go take it back now. So therefore, you tell him what a beautiful Kala. I will tell you that I'm aware of many situations where men ask their friends, what do you think of my girlfriend? What do you think of this girl that I'm going out with? And if the friends say, no, she's not good looking, the person will never go out with her. And if friends say, she seems very nice, go out with her, that will often spur a shidduch. And then afterwards, that husband will say, that's the most beautiful Kala in the world. What was I ever thinking? So there are some things that it just makes very good sense that a person should go and give a very positive opinion of somebody. Again, we're not talking here about midos, character traits that would be significant flaws in the marriage. But if somebody says that this is a Kala Nova Chasuda at the wedding, so that is a wonderful thing to say, whether she's a chigeris or a suma or in any other flaw that she may have, that is not a fatal flaw to the marriage, Rachmana Litzlan, but it's just a subjective type of a flaw that maybe you wouldn't have wanted. So you're allowed to say, and we do say, and we sing the famous song, Kesa Meraklil Fnei Akala, Kala Noa V'Chasuda. This has been codified and indoctrinated as the proper way that we should approach these factors. Ki Asa Rav Dimi, when Rav Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Bavel, Amar, he said that they would say a similar thing in Eretz Yisrael, Hochi Mashu Kamei Kalosa B'Maro, but this is what they would say in Eretz Yisrael about the Kala, Lo kichol, it's not the makeup that she puts on her eyes. As Rashi says, Eino tzrika kol, she doesn't need to wear eye makeup. Lo srak, she doesn't need to wear this rouge. As Rashi says, Tzeva hama'adim es aponim, this makeup that she puts on to make her face nice and rosy. And lo pirkus, Rashi says, pirkus is klia seir, to braid her hair. And she doesn't need any of these things to make herself beautiful. Nevertheless, v'yala schein, she has schein. She is going to be a wonderful kala noa v'chasuda. Where continues that they did a similar thing when they got smicha in Eretz Yisrael. Ki samchu rabbanan l'Rabbi Zeira. When the rabbis gave smicha to Rabbi Zeira in Eretz Yisrael, shorli hachi, they said about him the following. Lo kichol, he doesn't need eye makeup. Lo srak, he doesn't need rouge. Lo pirchas, he doesn't need to braid his hair. Nevertheless, v'yal eschein. So this idea wasn't just the physical beauty. It's talking about in general. This person doesn't need outside things to adorn him. This person is intrinsically of great value. Similarly, Kishamchu Rabbon Rabbi Ami v'Ravasi, when these first generation of Amoraim, Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, got smicha in Eretz Yisrael, they were Tamidim Rabbi Yochanan, so Sharulu Chochi, so he's saying about them the following way, Kol Mindain, V'chol Mindain, Smochu Lona. As Rashi points out, Kol Mindain means Kol Kamose, anybody who's like these two, Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, we should be giving them smicha. Havu Somchin Lonu, L'Krosan, Rabbi, that we should be looking forward to calling such people our Rebbe, ulemanosam dayonim, and to appoint them as dayonim. If you're of the caliber of Rav Ami and Rav Asi, you are appropriate to get smicha and to be a dayin. But lo sismuchu lana, we shouldn't go and appoint and give smicha to people, lo min sarmisin. Now I'm going to translate these words often with the Rashi that we have here or Rashis that we have elsewhere. So Rashi over here translates sarmisin as misorosin, halachos behefich tameim. These are people that mix up the halachos. They go and Masaris, a Siris is a person who's castrated. In other words, they chop up these halachos and incorrectly state them over. That's what sarmisin means. Likewise, we shouldn't appoint people for smicha, below min sarmitin. Rashi over here has sarmitin as loshon smartutin, which means shmatas. Elsewhere, Rashi says that this is loshon hafchonim. These are people that always do the opposite of what's correct. Kimo sares es hamikra misofo lirosho. They darshan things backwards in the wrong way. Shemahatchin is tamei Torah, and they mix up the tamei and the Torah, and as a result, they paskin incorrectly. Then Rashi says the sarmitin is also a loshon of smartut. Elsewhere, Rashi says that this is the shmatas over here, meaning klomar she'ein notes them tam hogun l'divrayim. They don't properly back up what their psak is with learning properly. In other words, they make a shmata out of their psak halacha. Other say v'amri lo, we shouldn't appoint lo min chamisin. Rashi over here tells us chamisin's omrin chamishis hatam. They only say 1/5 of the time. In other words, they don't really know the full reasons for what they're pasking and therefore are making mistakes. And the Masoras Shas Os Tes, he adds from the Aruch that he says shishonim Chumsha Shomasechas. They only learn a fifth of Masechta, and then they paskin on the entire Masechta. And he brings down Rashi from the Sanhedrin that says it's Loshon Chamsonin Shemonim Milomar Tami Torah, that they don't say over the proper explanations for the Torah, and therefore they make mistakes. And likewise, we say V'lo Min Turmisin. You shouldn't be appointing people to be rabbanim and dayanim that are termisin. Rashi over here says lowest parish. I don't know what it means, but then Rashi tells us right after that in parentheses, maybe this was added at a later point in time, this hagah over here is from the marshal. So he brings down termisin kiahid, the amma b'reishis rabba, like we have in the b'reishis rabba where it says al termisin lemikrav lemesana dematrinisa anoshim reikonim. So this means over here empty people. In Oschav, he says that some have the girsa tul musin, and Rashi says that means tul musin means anshe chomus, people that are basically robbers. They are stealing from people. And he says in the Targum, it's odom blial. Bar nash tulmus is a person who's an evil person, is a bad character person. Others explain that turmus is a certain type of bitter vegetable, and therefore these people are bitter people. In other words, all of these are very non-complimentary statements, and we shouldn't appoint such people to be our rabbanim and our dayanim. Rabbi Yavo, ki avo ase mi misifta le Beit Kesar. When Rabbi Yavo left the Beis Medrash, he went from the Beis Medrash to the Beit Kesar, where he would go and discuss various communal matters with the Kesar. So nafgon amhosa, the women from the Beit Kesar, the women who lived in the house of the Beit Kesar, would go and praise him. Nafkon Amosa de Bekesa Liape, in front of him they would go and sing Umashrin Le Hochi, the following song, Rabba de Ame. They would say, you great person, Nosi bi Amo, you're the leader of your people. Umadabrono de Umose. Rashi explains that you're the manig, you're the leader. As we mentioned many times, Dabrono is an accompanying person walking with somebody else. He was the leader of Klal Yisrael. Butsina de Nahora. So here Rashi says, it means, I'll show you a cluster ponim mavik. His face was radiating like a light. And he brings down from Moran Bava Basra, Shufri the Rabbi Avo, that the appearance, the face of Rabbi Avo, the Ein Shufri the Rabbi Yochanan, was a little bit like the face of Rabbi Yochanan. And it tells us that the face of Rabbi Yochanan was like the face of Yaakov Avinu. The Nafki Zihirusa, he like shone, as the Gemara there discusses. Elsewhere, Rashi brings down, and this is from Bava Metzia, Daf Pei Dalet, Al Shem Shoyo Godol Benoy. He was a very beautiful person. Like it says in Asoche Sapoalim, that Shufrei de Rabbi Vo means Shufrei de Rabbi Yochanan or Yaakov Avinu, which is similar to what we just brought down over here in our Rashis as well. Finally, they concluded, the women from the Beit Kesar's house, they concluded and they said, Brich Masyoch Lishlom. Rashi says, this is basically a bracha, baruch, boacha, l'shalom. Your comings and goings should be in peace, and they recognize the greatness of Rabbi Yavo. Okay, going back to Ketzim Rakhdim Le'akala. Amru lava Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi, shoyen notel bad shel hados, umaraki lifnei akala. The Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi. Now, when we have Stam Rabbi Yehuda as a chassid, it's either Rabbi Yehuda bar Eloi or Yehuda ben Bava. So he was certainly an unbelievably great person. And he would go and personally dance in front of the kala, holding on to these hadasim. Sheinotel bad shel hados. He would hold on to these myrtle branches and dance in front of the kala. Omerake lifnei akala. He would dance in front of the kala and he would say, "Omer kala noah v'chasuda." Look at the beautiful kala. Look at this kala who has so much chen. Again, he was the gadol hador, and it wasn't below his dignity to go and dance with hadasim branches in front of the kala. This is why we have great rabbanim, the Rashi Yeshiva and the rabbanim that come to weddings and they are dancing in front of the chosin and kala to be merake the chosin and kala, this opinion of Beis Hillel, kala nova chasuda, to make the chosin and kala feel good, to see these great rabbanim, this Rashi Yeshiva, Gedolei Hador, dancing in front of the kala like a regular plain person. That's a tremendous kavod haTorah, and that's a tremendous way to be mesameach the chosin and kala. Now, I will point out the Etz Yosef and the Yaakov does point out that he danced with one bad shel hadas, a single bad. We'll see in a moment that another one of the Amorayim, Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, danced with three badim, and we'll see a difference between these two. In any event, that's what the Gemara tells us about Rav Yehuda bar Eloi. Then it tells us Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchok, Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchok, Merakid Atlos. Rashi explains Merakid Atlos means Shalosh badim Zorik Achas Mekabel Achas. He juggled them. He would throw up one, then catch it, throw up another one, and catch it. So he juggled these three badim. Others understand this differently. For example, the Marsha and other Mepharshim say they would dance in front of three people. But let's learn simple like Rashi that he would juggle with these three badim. And Omer Rezera said Komachsif Lon Saba. He said that's like degrading, that the great Talmud Chacham should go and dance over here. As Rashi says, "Shemazalzel b'kovu tamidei chacham v'noi kalas rosh b'atzmo," and he's juggling. Imagine the greatest Rashi Yeshiva going in front of the Chassan Kala and juggling. But that's what Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak did. So Rav Zeira seemed to be saying that that's incorrect. However, kinoch nafshei, when Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak passed away, ifsik amuda the nura bein didei lukula yama. HaKadosh Baruch Hu made it that there was a amud of nura, a fire pillar, that stood between him and all the other graves of the people around him. In other words, he was in a separate domain. He had a machitza, a fire surrounding him, suggesting that nobody else could approach his level of greatness. And we had a Kabbalah, a tradition, the lo afsik amuda the nura, that this type of a special machitza of a fire, a pillar of fire that separates a person's grave from all the other graves around them, only occurs elo ichad lechad bedora ilatre bedora. That only occurs once or twice in a generation. In other words, he was really the gadol hador, and this Shmuel bar Rabbi Yitzchak was being lauded over here by a Kaddish Baruch Hu as being an unbelievably great tzaddik. Now, Amar Zera, when he saw this, said, it's clear the reason why he was honored in this way, that he is considered like one of the two greatest Gedolei Hadar, is because of the way that he danced, these shutise, these myrtle, these hadasim. Rashi explains that that's what shutise means. Shot shel hado, shoy marakibo, these myrtle branches that he danced with were the reason why he was given such a great send-off, so to say, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu went and demonstrated that he was deserving to be separated from all the other leaders of the generation because he was so great. Now, how do we know the Rav Zeira said that this was due to the Shutisei? So Tosus brings down, and he says that the fire had the shape of a hodos. So he says, this avida ke'en shivsho the hodos, this nura, this fire, had the shape of a hodos, and therefore everybody understood that that's why he deserved it. Others say, Yamri law, that Rav Zeira said, Shutusei l'sava, this, what he was calling originally, this embarrassing action that this Saba did, that this great Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak did, his silliness, his foolishness, actually was a great, great zechus for him. Or a third opinion, the Ami law, Shitase l'Saba, that his opinion, his Shita, that you're supposed to be Meraki, the Chasin, the Kala, and not worry about your own personal reputation, what are people going to say about this great, great Rosh Hashiva, this great Gadol, who's doing juggling acts over here, so when you're doing it, L'Shem Mitzvah, that's a Shita, that's allowed. I thought Lanias Dati, this is exactly what there was a little bit of a sechsuch between David HaMelech and Michal, his wife, Shaul's daughter, that she was upset that David HaMelech was being merake in such a fierce way that she said it wasn't covered for the Malchus. And he said, no, that's exactly the way the king is supposed to act. The king is supposed to show and demonstrate that he's nothing compared to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and I'm merake and I'm dancing here so exuberantly. That's not a lack of cover for the Malchus, that's a tremendous cover for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And therefore, that's why he did it, and that's what this Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak did. Now, I mentioned before, the Eitz Yosef asked, how come that we didn't find that Yehuda bar Elai, who also danced in this way, why didn't we say over there that a pillar of fire, Amuda Nenura, separated him from the rest of the generation? So originally, I thought on my own, that's because he was the Gadol Hador. So of course there would be a pillar of fire for there, and they wouldn't attribute it to just the fact that he danced with the Hadassim. But the Eitz Yosef gives an interesting teretz. He says that Rav Shmuel bar Yitzchak was a very old man, and yet he somehow strengthened himself to be able to pick up and juggle these three, must have been pretty impressive, large myrtle branches, these Hadassim. Whereas Rav Yehuda bar Elai was only able to go and pick up one. It was so heavy, and it was difficult for him to pick up. So because Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak went out of his way to do something that was absolutely so amazing to do, so that's why he was rewarded with this Amuda Denura, whereas Rav Yehuda bar Elai did what he could, but he didn't do the same as Rav Shmuel bar Rav Yitzchak. Interesting, Eitz Yosef. Mark continues and discusses Ketzad Narakiv Niakalo, Rav Acha, Markiv Lo Akasve Umarakid. Unbelievable. Rav Acha would pick the collar up, put her on his shoulders, and dance with her. Right? We often have at weddings that they pick the chasen up, but the men pick up the chasen, and they'll have the collar picked up on a chair, and usually it's the women that pick up the collar. So here, Rav Acha himself put the collar on his shoulders directly. So the rabbi said, Amri l'rabbanan, anan, ma'ul levet hachi, nu, is this a good practice? Should everybody adopt this practice that Rav Acha did? And the Gemara says, obviously not, amal hu. So Rav Acha said to them, no. Idam yon alaychu, if the kala is to you like kikshura, like a beam, in other words, you get zero pleasure or zero hirhurim or thoughts of impropriety by picking up the kala, so then, gizuntay, l'chayay, then you can be like me. I have zero Yetzahara in this respect. When I pick up the kala, it's no different than if I was picking up a piece of wood, and therefore I can do this. But don't try this at home. I always say this is a professional driver on a closed road. Don't try this at home. But Elo, if you cannot do this, obviously don't. And today, there certainly is nobody that can do this, and therefore nobody should be picking up the kala and putting her on your shoulder. Gemara continues, says, Amr Shmuel ben Achmeini, Amr Yonah's son, Rishur Onen is the name of Yonah's son, Mutal Listako, Bifnei Kala Kol Shiva. One is allowed to go, and Listako really means to stare at the kala all 7 days, because the Kidei Lechabvo Abala. If the Chassan sees it, everybody's looking at his kala. In other words, everybody's saying, wow, she's gorgeous, I have to look at her. So that's going to make the husband love his wife more. However, as you might have expected, the Gemara says, Veles Hilchaso Kavose. That's not the proper way nowadays. Maybe in the time of Rosh Shmuel ben Achmeini or Yonasan, when people were so much purer and people were able to control the Yetzirah better, so then maybe it might have been appropriate to do so. But nowadays, it certainly is not the Aloha Lamaisa, and certainly one shouldn't stare at the Kala. To go look at the Kala and say, oh, Kala Nova Chasuda, so that's allowed. But to go and stare in all 7 days, so that is totally inappropriate, Aloha Lamaisa nowadays. Mark Ketino says, Tana Rabbanu, and Mahavirin es Hameis Lufnei HaKala. Another interesting thing is that Rana Litzan, you have a Levaya of a mace, you have a Levaya, and the mace is going on the road, and the Kala, the escorting of the kala to the wedding ceremony, is going on the road as well. So who goes in front of who? So you have Mavirin es Hameis Lufnei HaKala. So you move the mace away and you let the kala go first. In other words, Mavirin es Hameis over here means that the kala takes precedence and you remove the escort of the mace to a different way or to the side. So let the kala go through first. Kozos brings down Mikan Mashba Kishesh Ovel V'Chosin V'Veis HaKnesses. If you have both an Ovel and a Chosin in the Shul, HaChosin Yotzei Tchila, you let the Chosin leave first, V'Shush Binov, and he's with his whole entourage, and then V'Shuv Yotzei Ovel U'Menachbub, and then the Ovel goes out with the people that are menachming him. V'Gam HaKrovim V'Chosin V'Ovel Yochul V'Veis HaChosin Yemirtzu. So likewise, if you have both relatives that would be invited to the Beis Ovel or to the Beis Chosin, so if they wish to, they can go to the Beis Chosin, it's a bigger kobod. And he says, likewise, Chaim Bebokish, Shumulich Makal, the Beis Chosin, Mulich Makal Tchila, Im Yesh Meis Meir. The Kala takes precedence over the Meis, O Yikrivu, Kodim, Shegi Azman, Nachnosis Kala, or take the Meis first before it's time for the Kala to go. That's what he brings down from the Ravya. In other words, so the taking care of the needs of the Kala take precedence over here of the Meis. And he says, the Gemara continues, the Brisa continues, for both of them, they're both less important than the king. So for both of them, v'zeh, milfnei melech Yisrael. So you mavir es hameis v'yes hakala in front of the king. In other words, the king takes precedence, he gets to go first. But then the Brisa says, Amulo Agrippas HaMelech. Agrippas was the king of Israel towards the end of the Bayis Sheni. He was actually of a non-noble lineage. In fact, he was an Idumean slave. And Agrippas was not really roy to be the melech, but he was the melech, and he had a certain status of being a melech. And one time, he let the kala go ahead of him. Sha'avah milfnei hakala. He didn't hold on to his ceremony, and he said, let the kala go first. And v'shibchu chacham, the chachamim praised him. Now, Tosus points out, you might think that this is because he wasn't really the king, but nevertheless, since he conducted himself like a king, so therefore, it wasn't something that we can just dismiss and say that he wasn't the king. So the Gemara says, how could he do this? How could the rabbis praise him? Shibchu miklal de shapro, but that implies that what he did was the right thing. Bo'am Ravashi says that melech shemoch lakvodo ain't kodomocho. And this is even a filu l'man diyomer nasi shemoch lakvodo kodomocho. Even according to Binyan, it says that the nasi is allowed to be mochel on his kavod, but everybody agrees, while it's a machlokus in regards to a nasi, melech shemoch lakvodo ain't kodomocho. In regards to a king, he doesn't have the right to be mochel on his kavod. Even himself, he can't be mochel on himself, the kavod, and certainly other people can't be mochel for him, ain't kvodo mochel, because the Yom the pasuk tells us, som tosim olecho melech. When it tells us that we should appoint ourselves a king, it uses this lashon som tosim, which Rashi explains means multiple simos. You can see this in Dira Maskus, som tosim olecha melech. Yisrael, who's that rule? The Jewish people have won. Shiyasimu aleim simos harbe. By this double lashon of som tosim, we have to constantly, again and again, klomar, shetei emaso aleihem, that you have to have constantly awe of the king. Hilkach en kvodo mochel, even if he is willing to be mochel on it. Shalafikach ribe because of simos harbe. That's why the Torah says som tosim. It's as if each time he's mochel, you have to reappoint him as the king, so he can never be mochel. So how was Agrippa Samelach praised by the Chachamim for letting the kala go first? It seems to be awesome for him to do so. And again, tells us the Dibra Maschu Melech Shemachal says Afal Gav the Lohi Melech Gomer, even though he wasn't really a full king. Mikom Makom Hayinogim Bo Kavod Kemelech Gomer. He was treated with the full covet of a Melech. So how can they do this? So the Gemara says this was different because Parashas Drachim Habay. This was at a crossroads in the way, and therefore it didn't look like he was letting the Kali go first. He just turned off and veered off in a certain direction. So he knew that he wasn't going in that direction, but nobody else could see this, so therefore it didn't look like a pagam in the covet of the Melech. As Tosus points out, here we can't say, well, if you're doing a mitzvah, so then maybe that would be allowed, because there is no greater mitzvah than honoring the king in terms of honoring the chosen, honoring a mace, etc. So therefore, in this situation, you can't say that it was a mitzvah, like we might say in other places where you'd be allowed to go against a certain principle. So here, the mitzvah would have been that he should go first, but he was able to do this in a way that didn't impinge upon the covet of the Malchus, so therefore he was praised by the Chachamim for doing so. Okay. Gemara continues, Tanur Rabbanan within the following price, so Mivatlin Talmud Torah, Lotzos Ameis, that even people are learning the base medrash, if there's a need, as was explained in the Gemara, if there's a need for them to go, certainly for a Meis mitzvah, but even if it's not a Meis mitzvah, even if it's not proper kavod, that they don't go, so they're allowed to shut their gemara and go to the levaya of the Meis. Likewise, ulachnos eskala, if it wouldn't be an appropriate number of people at the wedding, so they're allowed to shut the gemara and go and dance at the wedding of the chasen kala. And omer lo al Rabbi Yehuda bar Iloi, again, they said this about Rabbi Yehuda bar Iloi, shoyim avatel Talmud Torah, he was a gadol ador, he's Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid, he is a tremendous, great person, and yet, he would be avatel Talmud Torah, lo tzoas emes ulachnos eskala, to fulfill these two ideas that we just said, even Rabbi Yehuda bar Iloi would stop his learning and go to dance at the wedding of the chasen kala and to escort the mace to the burial area. Under what circumstances is this required? Does every single base medrash have to close? Does every single person have to stop learning? So, if you don't have enough people there to properly escort the Levayis HaMeis and to properly dance at the wedding of the Chosan HaKala, if there are enough people there, then then you don't have to be Mevatel Talmud Torah in order to do that, because there is a kavod already there, and therefore there's no pagam in the kavod of the mace or of the kala while you're going. Now, how do we define called sarko? Bakama called sarko, so it's actually a lot more than you might have thought. So, Rav Shmuel bar Ini, Mishmei the Rav, Rav Shmuel bar Ini said the name of Rav, Teresar Alfe Gavre, Veshisa Alfe Shipure. If you have 12,000 men at the Levoyas Hameis, and an additional 6,000 people that blow shofar, so that's considered called sarko, and therefore, if you're the 18,001st person, you could stay in the base medrash and learn. I mentioned previously when we had discussed this Gemara in Megillah, that the Sfaradim to this day still have a custom that they blow shofar at a Levaya, and it's probably based upon this Gemara where they used to blow shofar at the Levaya to gather the people. Others had a different gears over here, and they said that it was not 12 plus 6, it was Tlesa. That's the gears that we have, 13,000, but the Masoras Hashas brings down that the prep gears in Megillah, as well as over here, should be 12,000, Tresar Alfe, so it was 12,000 in total. Tracer Alfe Gavre Uminayu Shisa Alfe Shipuri. It was 12,000 in total, of which 6,000 in blue shofar. So it was 6 and 6, not 12 and 6. Okay. Ula says no. Kagon de Chaitse Gavre Meabulo Vyatsichro. If you have enough people to like make a line from the Abula. Abula is the gate leaving the town to the cemetery, Vyatsichra. As Rashi says, Mishara Ir Hahi Ada Keber, their cemeteries were right outside the town. They'd have these big towns like New York City. So they had little Stadt, the little town, and then they had a cemetery right outside. So if you had enough people to line the way from the gate of the city to the cemetery, so then that was considered called circle. That's what Ula said. Rosheshes or Vitema Rav Yochanan Amar, either Rosheshes or Rav Yochanan said, Nitilosa Kinesinosa, says no. Just like the Torah is given with a tremendous amount, when a Talmud Chacham leaves this world, so that Torah is leaving the world, so just like you needed 600,000 people at the time of the giving of the Torah on Har Sinai, so too you need 600,000 people to be considered called Sarko. So until you have 600,000 people there, a person should close his Gemara and leave the Beis Medrash to go and escort the mace. And the word continues and says, that's for a regular Talmud Chacham. Hani mili leman dekari. As Rashi explains, leman dekari means mikra. That's for a person who learns Chumash. Vitani, a person who learns Mishnais. That's what Rashi says. Aval adayin lo sholo tamidim, but he's not yet a Rebbe. But if the person is a Rebbe, we turn to Yitzayin Amid Beis. If the person has taught other people, aval leman demastele, if somebody went and teaches other people, Yachem, as Rashi says, less leishur, then there is no concept of cold sarko, then you can never have enough people there, and every person in that situation is allowed to close his gemara and go and escort the mace. Tosus in the top Tosus adds, linyan v'locha, however, people leaving work, b'vatlin kobinei ha'ir, b'osur afilu l'man de lo kari v'lo tani, even if the person is not a rabbi, but to stop your work, that we do it even for a regular person, and not necessarily only for a Talmud Chacham who's taught other people. Lamaisa, we don't paskin in this absolute sense. Certainly, if there is a need, kol charchu, we define differently. If it's a proper kavod, certainly for a great rebbe, then you do close the base medrash. But even if it's not a great rebbe, even if it's just a regular person, so appropriate people are allowed to leave the base medrash. And it's always a kasha. The same thing with the wedding. It's always a kasha whether you're really needed at the wedding to be mesamech tochos in the kallah, so then you should go to the wedding. But if you're not that close and your presence there is really not going to enhance the simcha tochos in the kallah, so then it's better for the person to stay in the base medrash and not to go to every single wedding of every single boy in the base medrash. But again, each of these things needs to be individualized, and the Shaila asked, and the same thing applies with the Levaya Rachmana Litzlan. Okay, that concludes the Ketzah Meraktim part of the Shia today. Fascinating Shia, and now we go on to the next quotation from our Mishnah. It says, V'myesh Edim Shiyotzah V'inum V'chule. We said in the Mishnah, when there was no Kesuba, and the woman says she was a Besula, and the husband says, or the relatives of the husband, if the husband died, say that no, she was an Almana, so then, if she's able to bring witnesses that she went out to the wedding, bihinuma, so then she can collect the full ksuba of Masayim Zuz. So what is this hinuma? My hinuma, I already mentioned this gemara previously when we did the Mishnah. So Surcha Bar Papa, this is one of the famous sons of Rav Papa that we mentioned always at a siyum. So Surcha Bar Papa said over Mishmei de Ziri, said the name of Ziri, Amar, he said as follows, Tanura di Asa. And the Rashi, it tells us, this is like a chup, a canopy, shel hadas agula, of a round hadasim, of a round canopy of hadasim. Okay. Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan Amar, kirisa de minamna bo kalosa. He says that this is the veil. This is the tsa'if al rosha. This is like the head covering that she would wear. Mishurvav alinea. It goes down over her eyes. Kamosha osu b'komemu, like was done then, and it's a custom as well now, Rashi says. And since it's a heavy, thick veil, so sometimes she closes her eyes and trembles a little bit. She goes to sleep a little bit. Nobody's going to notice that she's asleep because her eyes are covered up. That's why it's called Enuma, al shem tenuma, because of sleeping. Tenuma is another word for taking a nap. So therefore, that's why it's called Enuma. Okay, so if she has proof that this Enuma was present at her wedding, so this was only done by Besulos, so therefore she could collect the 200. Then we said, Rav Yochanan Baruch said that they also used to throw out these parched grains, these toasted kernels of grain, only at a Besula's wedding. So where it says, Tana b'Yehuda Raya. This was the common minhag to do this in the region of Yehuda. But this wasn't necessarily a common minhag elsewhere. So b'Bavel, my, what is the proof that a woman was a Besula in Bavel? If they didn't do these customs that they did in Yehuda, so how would you know? What would be a proof that they did this only by a Besula and not by other women? So I'm a Rav. Dar duge de mishcha areishi de rabbanim. They had a very interesting custom that the women, Rashi explains, would go and pour hanoshim nosdin shemen birosha talmidim vishafos. That the women would go pour oil on the hair of the talmidim and they would rub it in. And that was only done by a basula, and therefore, if you had witnesses as this was done, so then you could guarantee that the woman was a basula and she would be able to collect the ksuba of Mosayim. Omli rapapale abayi. Mishcha de chafifusa kamamar. So Rav Papa says to Abaye, really? Is that what they did? That they would go and basically shampoo the hairs of the young Tamidim? Rashi says, Shemin shel besomim shemesukon either lechupos or lechafifa, depending on the different gears over here. So they would go and shampoo? Is that really what you're saying? V'chi balei chafifa saying lesochon shemin? Is this really the custom that they would do? That's where Papa was amazed. And Abai tells him, yeah, Amalei Yasma, you, unfortunately, are Yosom in regards to this custom. Yosom miminu kanoek. You are unfamiliar. You're like an orphan that didn't know his parents. So you're not familiar with this custom. In fact, this was the common custom. Didn't your mother do this for you? Lo av the loch imach. Didn't your mother at your wedding go and rub oil into the hair of the Tamidim, Darduge Mishcho Areshi the Rabbanim Bishas Maisa, at the time of your wedding, your mother didn't do this? This was a very common custom that they did this at a certain wedding. For example, he was the Asik Le Livrei Be Rabba Bar Ula when they made a shidduch for one of the Rabbanon with the daughter of Rabba Bar Ula, or others say, Vamilah Rabba Bar Ula was the one, the Asik Le Livrei made this shidduch for his son, Be Halmei Rabbanon, with a certain Choshev Tam Chacham. And at this wedding, v'dardeg mishcha areshe d'rabbanan b'shas ma'aseh. And at the wedding, they did this. They rubbed oil into the hair of the Talmidei Chachamim. So this was what they did. Shof shemen b'rosh ha-talmidim. That's what they would do. They would rub oil into the hair of the Talmidim, and they did this somehow only at a Basula's wedding. And therefore, if they had witnesses to come to testify that this practice was done, so even though the woman doesn't have a ksuba, she'd be allowed to go and collect as a Basula and not as a Amon. Then we said, Amalto mai, or some of the gears, almona mai. How do you show that a woman was an almona? What signs did they have that the woman was an almona? So Tani Rav Yosef learned the following brisa. Amalto les lo kisne. In the almalta, at the wedding of the widow, so they would be very, very careful not to throw the parched kernels. So therefore, in this situation, as Rashi says, masimon osili almona, lodia shalmona, and it says, so Ein lo kloyos v'zeh simona, from the fact that they can't testify that they threw any kernels, so therefore that's proof positive that she must be an amona. Okay, as Tosu says over here, Adibra Masko Amona Mai, he says, Behuda boy shloyo elo chilu kloyos, lekach boy amona mai. In Yehuda, we said that they put out the kloyos by the besula. So what's for an amana? Because sometimes they would throw this out. So he says, so are we concerned that maybe they did this in amana? So the answer is that they would be bedavka nizharin harbe shlo yachluku kloyos b'chupas amana. So they were medactic not to have anybody throw these parched kernels, these toasted grains, at the amana's wedding, and therefore it, you can have witnesses that it wasn't thrown, so then it would be pretty much a guarantee that she was an Amona. Okay. Then we call to Mishnah, the Rabbi Yeshua, so Yeshua agrees that in this situation, I gave the example, where Reuven says to Shimon, I bought this field from your father, Shimon's father, but I purchased it from him, and you never knew that this was Shimon's field, it was his father's field, so then we believe him. That's what we said. Even Rabbi Yeshua, as we had this discussion yesterday, Rabbi Yeshua was Moda that this is true. So Gemara says, why do we have to say that it was Shimon's father? Why didn't Reuven say, I bought this from you, Shimon? For listening, we should have said, Moda Rabbi Yeshua, but Omer L'chaveiro. If a person says to his friend, if Reuven says to Shimon, Sadezu Shelucha Haisa, this field was yours, U'lekachti Yamimcha, and I purchased it from you. Why do we have to go to the level of the father? Now, obviously, we're dealing with the case that Shimon did not remember or does not know that he had this field. Otherwise, if Shimon was aware of it, this would be the case that we explained in yesterday's year. This would be Shor Shoch L'finecha. It's not a miko then. Shimon say, hey, that's my field. What are you doing with it? And if Reuven says, listen, it's mine, so that's I purchased it for you, that's not a good enough proof. You need a raya or shnei chazaka, as we'll see in a moment. So the Gemara is asking now, why did we have to go to the case of it being Shimon's father's field? Why didn't Rabbi Yeshua say that we're dealing with a case where he goes, just Reuven goes to Shimon and says, this used to be your field, but I purchased it from you, and now it's my field. So Gemara says, Mishum de Koboy lemis de Sefer, because not the Reish is the problem, but the Sefer is the problem, where we say, if there were witnesses that it once belonged to Shimon, meaning Shimon's father in our Mishnah, but if we'd say that it belonged to Shimon, then if Reuven were to say that I purchased it from you, that wouldn't be enough. Or in the situation of Mishnah, I purchased it from your father, that wouldn't be enough. So why didn't we say it was the son? Why did we not say the father? Because Hechidami. Because if Reuven were to say to Shimon, I purchased this field from you, I don't have my star anymore, but I've lived on it for 3 years. The Gemara elsewhere is going to teach us these halachas when we get to the Bavas, so we'll learn the rules of chazaka. So in the Gemara, in Bava Basra, it's going to teach us the rules of chazaka, cheska sabatim, so it's going to tell us that if you don't have your star, but you've lived there for 3 years, from the fact that the person didn't protest, what are you doing on my field, and you have 3 years of chazaka, you can prove that you were there for 3 years, even though you don't have a star, you're allowed to collect, because a person may not keep your star for many, many years. So if you can prove that you've lived there for 3 years, and he was aware of it, and he didn't protest, so that's proof positive. So here, even though he had witnesses that it once belonged to the son, so that wouldn't help us because he have Shnei Chazaka. And Amaylo Mehemen, why wouldn't he believe then? Why do we say in the Mishnah that Reuven is not believed? Ivi de lo Shnei Chazaka, and if he doesn't have the 3 years of living there, so then Pshita de lo Mehemen, of course he's not believed. So what would be the Chiddush of a Mishnah? So that's why it tells us with the father. And the Chiddush is, Ihachi Gabi Abinamin. The Gemara says, wait a second, then by the father, the same thing would apply. So then, why would it be any different with the father? The Gemara wants to suggest either the 3 years of Chazaka, and then even if witnesses come and say it belonged to the father, big deal, the 3 years of Chazaka. And if there aren't 3 years of Chazaka, so then once the witnesses come, Pshita. The Gemara says, no, the difference is over here between the father and the son is as follows. Bishlomo Gabi Aviv. If you have witnesses that the father once owned it, so then we could get around the chazaka question over here. Mishkaches lo kigon sha'achala shtayim chayav. There were only 2 years where he lived on the field. Reuven used the field for 2 years while the father was alive. Shimon's father was alive. V'achas b'chayi b'no. And 1 year after the father died, it was a year when it was only Shimon around. And this goes in accordance with what Rav Huna said. Rav Huna, what did Rav Huna say? Rav Huna, ein machzikim b'nichsei katan, afilu higdil. Rav Huna says that a child doesn't necessarily know his father's business. So you can't go and make a chazaka on the child over here, even though he's not a child, a katan, even if he's older, you can't make the chazaka because we don't expect the child to necessarily know his father's business. And that's why we would have to use the case of the father in the Mishnah, because this way there wouldn't be any issues with chazaka. No, Rav Huna masnisa nosel shemina. When we said that this goes in accordance with Rav Huna, so this is a Beferish Mishnah, our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is telling us this. What is Rav Huna really adding? There's no other way to understand our Mishnah other than this. So Rav Huna is interpreting our Mishnah. It's obvious. And that's what the Gemara says. Rav Huna masnisa nosel shemina. Is he coming to teach us the Mishnah? So we have two teruts, and one of which is not so obvious. So Yibai is saying, Rav Huna diyuka du masnisa nkoma. Yeah, that's exactly it. He was telling us this diyuk. We may not have noticed it on our own, so Rav Huna is telling it to us. Or alternatively, Yibai is saying, you know what it is? Afilu higdil kamash v'lon. The Rav Huna is adding on that even though this child is no longer a child, he's now an adult, we still say he doesn't necessarily know his father's business, and therefore you can't establish the chazaka even if it was during the lifetime of the father 2 years and the lifetime of the son 1 year, and even if the child grows up, the simple understanding, we have a number of different ways to understand this, but the simple understanding is that you can't make a chazaka in the lifetime of the child, even if he's a gadol, at any point in time, because he's not necessarily going to know his father's business. Others learn it differently, but that's the simplest way to learn it, and that's how we'll learn it now. Now the Gemara says, still, the Mishnah could have done it a little bit differently. Why didn't the Mishnah teach it that Reuven purchased it directly from Shimon and not from Shimon's father? Because for Lokma, we could have it in the following scenario. Set up the Mishnah, Kigon Shachol or Shtayim Befonav, Yachashol Befonav. He had 2 years that he ate it right in front of Shimon, and Shimon didn't protest, but then Shimon went away. And the third year when he was away, so that doesn't count as Shnei Chazaka. For example, Kigon Shabarach, Shimon had to run away. Shmuel says, Baruch Machas Pai, why did he run away? If he ran away because his life was in danger, so of course he's not believed to say that he made a chazaka because the guy had to run away and he was hiding and he couldn't go protest because then they would find him and kill him. So he couldn't make a macha, so therefore that third year can't count. So that would be pashut. So the Mishnah wouldn't need to tell us that. But listen, a lot of people were trying to get money from him. He was owing a lot of people money, and that's why he went in to hide him. But then he could still make a macha. And if he didn't protest, so then he doesn't get entitled to the field. So why didn't the Mishnah give us this case? The Kaim Alon. He could have made a macha, even though he wasn't in the presence of Reuven, and that would count. So therefore, there is no case where if we brought Edim that it belonged to Shimon, that in fact, it would have worked out because either he made a macha because it was because of money, and therefore, if he makes a macha, obviously he gets to keep the field. And if he didn't make a macha, then there's Shnei Chazaka, there's 3 years. So therefore, it can't be a direct case of Reuven and Shimon. That's why we had to introduce Shimon's father. And the Gemara says, I'll show you that this is correct, that we had to introduce Shimon's father over here, and that we couldn't give the case over here with Reuven and Shimon themselves because it's not. We learned in the Mishnah, this is a Mishnah in Bava Basra, in Cheskes Abatim, Shalosh Arotzos L'Chazaka, that we divide Eretz Yisrael up into three different regions in regards to making Chazaka. We divide it up into Yehuda, the middle region of the country, the West Bank, the Hagola, and the northern part of the country. Hoya B'Yehuda, if somebody had lived in Yehuda, but he had property in the Galil, and somebody made a chazaka on his land in the Galil. So, for example, you have Reuven, who lives in Yehuda, and he has property in the Galil, and Shimon tries to establish a chazaka in the Galil, or vice versa. The Galil, Reuven lives in the Galil, and he has property in Yehuda, and Shimon tries to make a chazaka on his property in Yehuda, v'echze b'Yehuda, so ain't a chazaka. That's not considered a chazaka, because it's in a different area, and there's no reason to assume that he automatically knows what's going on in those other regions. Ache imo medina, unless he's living in the same place where he has property, and somebody else is sitting on that property, and he doesn't protest within 3 years. That's called Shnei Chazaka. But if it's in a different region, it doesn't count. That's what the Mishnah said. But when we questioned this Mishnah, we said as follows. Mike Sava, what does this Tana tell us? Is he trying to tell us? If he's trying to tell us that a macha that's not in front of a person is a valid macha, then I feel it will be Nami. So then why wouldn't this protest work, even though he's not in the Galil, he's in Yehuda, he should protest. Or he's not in Yehuda, he's in the Galil, he should protest and it should work. And if you're telling me that a machah doesn't work, so then why is it only over here, if you're in a different region, why is it only telling us Yehuda and Galil? If you're not in the same exact area, it's called a machah shalom b'fonim. That's not called the good chazaka that the person is making. It's only good chazaka if you're right there and you don't protest. So therefore, it doesn't make any sense. So Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Mamol, he explains as follows. In fact, the machah, when you're not there, is a good machah. But he's coming to teach us this following din. You don't have to be there to make a machah, but you have to know about it. Umas Nisan, the Mishnah in Bava Basra, is dealing with Shas Cherim Shonu. It's talking about wartime. And therefore, people didn't know what's going on in the other region. And therefore, in that situation, the person who is sitting on this property thinks he has Shnei Chazaka and he's not careful about a shtar. Where if he heard there was a protest, so then he would be very careful to hold on to a shtar. But in times of war, he doesn't hear the protest, and therefore we can't expect him to hold on to a shtar. Shmuel says then, Umayishno Yehuda v'Galil d'no akatsa. Why did it specifically mention Yehuda and Galil? It's the bottom Rashi tells us over here. Im yeish chiruv, there's a time of war, nami miyir le'ir. Afilu shtei eros, b'yosu medina nami lo. So then it has nothing to do with Yehuda and Galil. Has to do even within the same region. But people were scared to go from one city to another city, so they wouldn't hear about the protests, and they wouldn't know to hold on to the shtar. So we turn to Yudchesim and Aleph for the answer. And the Gemara says, no, but the Chiddush over here is teaching us is the Stam Yehuda v'Galil b'shas kishas cherim damu. That the status of Yehuda and Galil is always as if there's war going on between them. In other words, people didn't easily move from one place to the other. And therefore, if you're in Yehuda and the other person's in Galil, or you're in the Galil and the other person's in Yehuda, so then we can't establish a chazaka in that situation. And you better hold on to your shtar, because we don't allow a protest in that situation, because we consider it, it's always as if there was a war going on and you don't find out about what's going on in the other region. But what you see from here is, in general, a machah does normally count except in the time of war. Now this is a good break point, even though we're in the middle of still going to ask, and we'll continue asking a couple more times, why did the Mishnah specifically choose to have Reuven and the property was Shimon's father and not Shimon himself? We'll give a couple more examples of this tomorrow, but again, we'll prove that those wouldn't be applicable, and we have to use the case specifically in the Mishnah of Reuven purchasing the field from Shimon's father. With this, we conclude today's share.